Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me?
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, I'm just looking over at an empty coffee mug, and I realize I should have gone down and gotten the Cantigo. Is that what it is? Cantigo? the coffee mug thing. Mini thermos, at stevebick.com. I hope you're ready for another monologue. I won't go for an hour. Yesterday, that was very strange. just sort of started a ramble, but thank you very much to everybody for the responses. And Tina went ahead and ordered the grill. She ordered the grill. And she went ahead and got the rotisserie thing too. So we will be featuring all summer $6.99 roast chickens right in the driveway while they last. In fact, now you're in trouble. You've done it again. You've done it again. That reminds me of a story from Procter & Gamble days when I was sent to Charlotte. I was on the marketing side in Cincinnati, and then I got sent to Kansas City on the sales side, then got promoted to a junior management thing in Charlotte. And so when I got to Charlotte, one of the clients that we worked with was Winn-Dixie. And because of Winn-Dixie, the deli, P&G, and we sold the deli. We sold them shortening for the bakery and shortening for the fryer, Frymax, and the shortening for the donuts and stuff. That was not really my, I mean, I sold it, but it wasn't really my area. The donut side, Golden Sweetex and Sweetex. Anyway, when Winn-Dixie would open stores, the deli, there was all kinds of activity in the deli, including barbecue chickens, and they had the rotisserie machines, and like I think 32 chickens would come out every hour and 20 minutes, whatever it was. And so I don't even know how I got tabbed, but Bobby Tipton somehow tabbed me to get on the microphone and to do the promotion. There was also French bread, Italian bread, loaves that would come out of the oven every like 20 minutes, and and those were like 79 cents, and the chickens, they were giving the chickens away for like $1.99, and it was like a almost a 2-pound fryer, and you would then take tongs and you would dip it into barbecue sauce and then put it in a tray and shrink wrap it. So we would help as the reps for P&G. We would help with these openings. And Bobby Tipton said, "You're a talker. You want to get on the mic and promote it." So that became part of my responsibility. So it would be like, you know, "Good morning, Winn-Dixie shoppers. Welcome to your new Hickory Winn-Dixie. Right now in the deli for the next 15 minutes, as long as they last, we've got 31 barbecue chickens, $1.99. Come back to the deli." Let me tell you, the women, they're coming, the babies are bouncing in the carriage, and I count, and then I start to count the chickens now. 17, we've got 17 left, $1.99, regularly $5.99, and they're while they last, and oh my God, I haven't thought about that in ages. It was really fun, really fun. And then I would do the same thing. I would do the same thing with the loaves of bread, with the Italian bread, and sometimes I would tell you, there'd be so many. I would just go back and forth. People would be lined up by the registers, and I would come with like four loaves, you know, gathered in each hand, and I'd walk, and you basically just wave it in front of people's noses because it was hot bread. So I'd go back and forth across, you know, across the register lines, because people were lined up like six or eight deep. It was a big deal in some of these smaller, you know, smaller towns in the Carolinas. And I just wave it in front of their nose, and they would take one and they put it in their rat. Give me another one. But we had a lot of fun. My God, we used to show up if a store was going to open. I think they would open on Fridays. And we would show up like on Wednesday afternoon, work, you know, help set things up, and then the, you know, the doors would be open, and it was, we had some really fun out in Eastern Carolina. I remember going out there, and there was out toward Winston-Salem. I'm trying to think of what town this was in. The Angus Barn. I want to say the Angus Barn, or is that right? I got to look that up. A tremendous steakhouse, and so whenever we were within a certain distance of the Angus Barn, we would go, you know, after the store, and it was exhausting. I mean, you would work, you'd get there at 5 o'clock in the morning, and not be done until 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night. I loved the store openings for that. They had me do all kinds of wacky stuff, and I was game. We had a lot of. You also, what's funny about that kind of experience too? You end up becoming like a fan of certain things. Campbell College, Campbell University, right? It was out that way. I remember one store opening. And I didn't cover Eastern Carolina. I had Charlotte. I had three reps, John Brown, Scott Toney, and Lou Ledbetter. He was a problem. But we would cover down to the shore, Myrtle Beach and Charleston, Savannah. That was tremendous. That was the best, going to Savannah. In fact, when we were in Savannah last time, when Tina and I went, you know, year before last, I went looking for a chain that I had called on in Savannah, and it seemed like it was gone, called Crispy Chick. Crispy Chick. I think they had a couple dozen stores, and we didn't, yeah. All right, so you've already steered me into a jackpot here. right off the, and I've got a couple of serious things. I got something serious to talk about. The internet. The internet's a problem. I mean, let's be honest. The internet. What about that internet? I got to figure out how to hybrid this, because, you know, part of the problem was like this morning. This morning, I somehow, there's a couple of things, and one thing is related to, you know, to horse racing indirectly. The cows and Pico Rivera, did anybody see this? a beef processing plant in Pico, and I didn't know that there was a processing. You know, the only place where I know of processing beef is at the Dalray. I mean, that's and if these cows were running away, I can understand, because the pepper steak at Dalray cannot be beat, and so they're all looking to avoid becoming pepper steak at the Dal. But there were several dozen. You have to see this. There's a video that's literally an hour long of, and in fact, I can't believe that Samantha Siegel wasn't on top of this, because this is, you know, nobody loves, you know, a LA freeway chase more than Samantha. She loves them, and I'm surprised that she wasn't. They had the helicopter with the lights tracking. There was this one pair of cows that they could not get to, and you got to see it with the police cruisers trying to corner them as if they're going to something like they're going to herd them somehow. It's the craziest thing. I saw this morning. I get up early and I see Pico Rivera on my trend list, and man, I love Pico. Whittier Boulevard and Washington and the Dalray. So it's too funny. So that was number one. So I wasted God knows how much time this morning watching them chasing the cows. The best is when the cows are running past in the neighborhood and the dogs are going crazy. You can see dogs running their fence line because they're like, you know, I don't know. They think that they're Lassie and that they're somehow going to... What's that? What's that, Lassie? Cows are loose in Pico? Yeah, yes, exactly. So that's number one. Then, as if that wasn't enough of a time waster, and I had things to do, the San Antonio Riverwalk diver, the guy from Florida, has got a YouTube channel. I don't even know his name, but he went diving in the Riverwalk. He got permission from the city of San Antonio because you're not supposed to be doing that. But I somehow got roped into watching a guy poke around on the Riverwalk and pulling up phones and chairs and God knows what. So anyway, the internet's a problem for that reason, because I literally lost at least an hour between the diver, you know, in San Antonio and the cows in Pico Rivera. You never had to, you know, years ago, you never had this problem. I mean, you might read, you know, you might do Junior Jumble in the paper. But what did that take? 6 minutes? I mean, this, the internet wastes more time than Junior Jumble. The serious side of the internet. Let's get to the serious stuff. Otherwise, God knows how long this will go on. The two things. First, the runaway rumor and insanity regarding folding chairs in the backyard at Saratoga. You can't be this gullible. Or as I called our man Dan, obtuse. Of course chairs are okay in the backyard. If they're allowing coolers and for you to bring your own food, what made, and I know it was something on the website that was strangely worded, and so the next thing you knew, apparently last night, you know, like a California wildfire, they're not going to let people bring chairs to the backyard. You're going to have to stand for 9 hours. Of course you can bring your chairs. My God. So, actually, Pat McKenna, I was hoping Pat is tied up till 10 o'clock, so we will not do advisory with the tickets. The ticket sales start at 10 o'clock this morning on Ticketmaster, and I'll address that next. I better address things directly. The Ticketmaster thing we'll talk about in a minute, because I want to give you a couple of heads ups before you you know, start ordering tickets at 10 o'clock. But Pat will go through that. And I guess Pat this morning, I retweeted it because Pat, it had reached Pat's desk that people thought that they weren't going to be able to bring chairs in. I mean, craziness. So the internet perpetuating and furthering rumors. The other thing that's problematic, and this is much more distressing, Rich Migliore yesterday, Rich has had enough of Twitter, and I got quite a few people wrote to me because they certainly have enjoyed Rich, you know, Rich's visits, and those will continue, but he's had enough of Twitter. He put up a picture of Gabriella on her show horse, and was attacked. They attacked her and Rich because of equipment of something on the equipment, and Rich just absolutely, you know, won't have that, and I don't blame him. So he said, "That's it. I'm not. You know, he said, people are going to attack my daughter. You know, she's got a coach that equip. You know, puts the equipment." Decides on the equipment on the horses, and so her being, you know, criticized and attacked. I mean, I didn't see the specifics, but Rich wrote me last night. He asked me kind of what I thought, and you know, I could tell he was, you know, he was upset, and it's his child, it's his daughter, it's his only daughter, so you're messing with the wrong. That's just, you know, unnecessary and ridiculous. So, the internet. What are you going to do? It's everybody with a keyboard can make trouble. There's your morning missive here. Marcus Hirsch is going to join us shortly. Case, wanted to reach for Marcus. We'll get going. Marcus is going to give you some more opinions about Canterbury tonight. And actually, I'm going to probably get some thoughts from him on the Indiana card, too. We're going to talk to Bill Downs, as we said on Monday. We'll talk about those, particularly about the stakes, but it's a great card. And yeah, there's also, you know, big full fields in the other races that comprise the pick five. So Bill Downs later to look at the two Hoosier stakes, and looks like we got one heavy favorite, and it seems like the other race might be a little bit more open. So Marcus here shortly. While we get Marcus, Lenny Shulman, by the way, later to talk about his book, Head to Head, which I just received on Saturday. And I'll look forward to bringing it to Lenny and having him sign it. And you'll have plenty of opportunity. He'll explain where he's going to be for you to have Lenny sign the book and write whatever you want in it. A couple of one-liners. Back to Ticketmaster. All right. Regarding the tickets, do yourself a favor. You got 42 minutes before you can start to order. And I would go, if you do not have an account at Ticketmaster, open your account now. Register for an account now. Because if you don't have one, when you go to check out, it's going to prompt you to open it, you know, to fill out all the information. Get that out of the way now. All right? And if you've got one and you haven't used them, a lot of you, I haven't used Ticketmaster, obviously, in over a year. Where are you going to go? Right? What concert or sporting event? So I'm sure a lot of us have not looked at our Ticketmaster account. You probably forget your login and what email you used for it. So I would get that done in the next half hour, all right, in advance. And, you know, Pat can't join us till 10. So, I mean, in terms of advisories, I'll say, you know, be very patient. I'm sure you'll get rebuffed. You know, maybe go ahead and look at the various options so that you, you know, don't try to shop, you know, from 10 o'clock to 10:20 as to what area you want to sit and so forth. And, you know, have an idea of the dates, you know, have them written down, etc. If you need to go to look at the stake schedule, you can go to the, you know, naira.com/Saratoga, look at the, you know, see where it says racing, drop down, stake schedule, look at the stakes, see what weekend you're going to want to come, etc. Do all that now in the next 40 minutes, all right? That is our advice. Marcus Hirsch is joining us, and I've been trying to get Marcus for weeks, so it's good to have him with us. Marcus, good morning. There's Marcus Hirsch. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning.
Marcus, I've been wanting to get you, so I keep asking, and here we go, and I got about, I don't know, at least three things I can think of to talk to you about, including Canterbury tonight.
Canterbury tonight. How about Canterbury last night? I had my best day ever handicapping for the Daily Racing Form with 9 winners on top in 11 races.
You're kidding me.
No, and set like 5 prices, too. Of course, I only saw that this morning because we had family over and I wasn't tied on. That's the way it always goes, but I'm glad to see I figured it out, and I think everyone can assume that I'll be producing that kind of results on a daily basis going forward. I don't know why it took so long, but here we are.
Mark, that's unbelievable. Anyway, that's amazing.
You know, Ed, it was lucky. It's luck. There was 6 thoroughbred races. I had 5 of those, and then 5 quarter horse races, and I had 4 of those. I'm not going to lie, quarter horse racing. I mean, I look at the form, and I have my few little things that I look at, but I don't feel as confident in my abilities there as with the thoroughbred. So I do attribute a lot of luck to it. But I will, this prefacing the races there tonight with their biggest card of the year, they did take the temporary turf rail down for starting with last night's card, which really changes things. That when the rail has been out at 30 feet, it's been incredibly speed biased on the turf course. But last night, you know, watching the replays of the grass races, it was seemed totally fair, and I would feel confident that you can handicap, you know, based on what's there in the form and not have to take too much account of how the racing surface itself is going to influence the outcome.
Well, and I was gonna ask. I mean, if you're having that kind of, particularly with those kinds of returns, any advice for people that'll be looking at Canterbury tonight for the first time?
Well, yeah, that was the main thing. I mean, yeah. The rail really does had changed the had changed the way that was playing. The dirt course there is, and the stakes are all on turf except for the Stallion Auction race, which is actually not bad for what it is. Very fast playing track. The race shapes, if you're not used to it, are going to, I don't know, they look strange to me a lot of the time. Lots of how they line up neatly in some jurisdictions, like 2x2x2, everybody waiting and staying in position. That's not like that there. There's early moves, horses outside, lots of stuff going on, but you know, speed is rewarded a lot of the times, but I wouldn't call it an overtly speed-biased dirt surface more so than a regular, you know, dirt racing. But yeah, I thought their card tonight came up really good. I thought the stakes races, for the most part, were as good as I can remember up there, and it should be a pretty good card of racing.
Well, and they're going to have it. Actually, it's going to be a hot night as well.
Yeah.
But the key to me, I looked yesterday in advance of having Jeff Madej join us, and I was thrilled that, you know, the rain had cleared out. And I mean, so often,
oh, yeah,
you know, you get a card like this. I mean, I think about what happened at Penn National on the Penn Mile night.
Yeah, you know,
that was bad. So this
and
is
the prep
really good.
For this got rained off.
That's
here,
right.
At Canterbury, and they've had wet nights recently before on the big night. But I haven't looked at the forecast today. But last I saw, it was going to be like a baking hot today. But they got evening racings. First post is 5-something central, 5:10. So it'll cool down a little bit, but it will. If the forecast is right, it's going to be very fast and firm.
Well, let's go through this sequence, and it starts with the Curtis Sampson Oaks, and these are the 3-year-old fillies going a mile, and you got some accomplished types, and you've got some making moves from the dirt to the turf, and I talked about that with Jeff yesterday because that repeats itself a lot throughout the sequence.
Yeah, I got nothing interesting here. Saranya for Cox and Giroux, who have some really powerful entrants here. I liked her quite a bit. Just looks like a lot of pace horses in the race to me. I think they're going to be going a very legitimate tempo, and that should allow her to get over from an outside draw. If you remember the Appalachian, which is obviously has much, much, much better horses than she meets here, Giftless and Plum Ali were second and third in that race, and they both distinguished themselves at Belmont last out, I thought. She wasn't a bad fourth in that race. At racing surprisingly close to a slow pace, she's better off coming from behind. And the race, she ran it in New Orleans two back. The winner was on a really slow pace and flew home too. She had little chance there. Moreover, the trainer said that in the last few weeks she's really stepped up her training. She looks, according to Cox, like she's training better than she ever has. So with the big class drop, the probable decent setup, and that tidbit about the way she's doing, I'm afraid she's going to be a formidable favorite.
Won't argue, although I made a case yesterday for Becca's Rocket with Jansen Milanson.
Yeah, she's a pretty nice horse, really. She
right?
could sit right off of it and get first run.
That's what I'm hoping for. That's my... I was looking for just to try to get a price in the mix with the, you know, the obvious players, Amalfi Princess and Saranya.
Yeah, Becca's Rocket is the horse that I've followed for a long time, and she's actually quite admirable. She tries hard and has some versatility to her game, and brings the jock. You like the bring the jock angle?
Yeah.
Who did I have here? Amalfi Princess. I don't think that's much. Yeah, I got the second choice. Second, she's questionable to stay, I would say, that second choice Amalfi Princess, but she can probably get this kind of sharp smile, I would think.
Mac Robertson, certainly a guy that, you've handicapped your share over the years, and he is stretching out that heart full of soul who actually beat Becca's Rocket two back, and Mac stretches this one out. She's a violence filly out of a not-for-love mare, and, using Formulator, there's not a glaring success here for Mac doing this in stakes, but I just respect... You know, everything that he sends out. I always look twice when I see a nice price with Mac Robertson.
Well, I like her pedigree for the move to turf, just in general principles. And she did, she's got some talent. It's just a question of how fast she's going to have to go, what kind of trip she's going to get stretching out in a race with a lot of other pace players. I do think if things worked out for her in that way, if she rated a little bit just off the leaders, or if everybody took back and she was able to scoot clear, I think she could be very dangerous. I really do.
It's a good start to what is a all-stake pick four sequence. The pick five uses the last three stakes and then two allowances to close out the card tonight at Canterbury. Let's look at that second leg, and this is the 5-furlong Dark Star. Thought this had a nice nice group assembled in here, and you got to make a decision about Diodoro with Drina's Star trying to turf sprint. She's one for four, or he's one for four, I should say, in his turfs, you know, his turf tries. So, but it's been a while.
Oh yeah, I didn't fancy him very much. I think he's going to get. That's a horse that really needs to be forward, and there's just this race is crying out for a capable stalker type horse, but there's not one like that really presents himself. Obviously, I do think there. Sure, it's a five-furlong turf sprint. Of course, there are a lot of fast horses, but there are too many horses here who want to be on the lead, need to be on the lead as far as we can see. I settled on High Crime on the rail because I think that he could take back a little bit. They tried Blinkers last time, but they're coming off right away. He's not quite as quick, I don't think, as some of these. And his top races from last year, I think, are plenty good enough to win this. I just think if they can take a little bit of hold of him and he's okay with that and he manages to find some room, I think he could be the right one.
I don't disagree at all, and I was having the same thoughts in terms of looking for somebody that was going to come from off the pace, given how much speed was signed on. I thought Fireman Oscar wasn't impossible either for Van Winkle. And, of course, the High Crime story that is kind of nice is Darren Miller with... Chase, right? I didn't really realize that you know, the Chase Miller was breaking in, and he got his you know, got his first win earlier this year, and
yeah.
I haven't talked to Darren Miller in a while. I'd love to get into that story with him.
Yeah, no, Marty McGee, I believe, wrote a nice story about this situation for Daily Racing Form. I'm sorry to say it this way, but that's a concern I have. It's such an inexperienced rider, and it's going to be maybe a little bit tricky. And you really want to see, I would want to see this horse not like going forward right out of the gate. So we'll see how young Mr. Miller handles things. He hasn't ridden his horse before. I imagine he's been on him in the morning. I think he's a big part of the way the barn operates. Jazzy Times is a horse who, if he could dredge up one of his better races from the past. He was leading last time, but he's a horse who comes from off of it. I just don't think at age eight he's the same as he was a couple of years ago.
Third leg of the pick four is, as you mentioned, you were intrigued, it sounds like, by the Stallion Auction Stake, and it's kind of a funny set of conditions. I mean, in terms of three-year-olds that... were parented by stallions out of the, you know, the MTA auction, which is kind of unusual.
Right.
Yeah,
well,
it's kind of fun.
One of these in Iowa too, and I don't even bother trying to describe how the conditions work anymore because that would take your entire race preview. But you kind of got it. Breeders groups have these these auctions.
Stallion auctions.
People don't, yeah. So, I mean, if they were eligible. So it could be anybody. I mean, you could have, it just depends on which down was eligible. But these are the best horses in here are Minnesota breds, and there are some pretty fast horses. The Star of the North horse was a pretty good two-year-old and then ran well over the winter at Houston. I suspect that she's ready to fire, but you just wonder, you know, if she was precocious more than anything. And it's always interesting when first-time star Tony Rangstorff, the horse Unbridled Bayou, who has a really good sprint pedigree, I think, Shackleford out of a two-punch mare, and that's a very competent barn that's having a good meet. And I don't ever give short shrift to these first-timers from capable outfits. In races like this, it's usually meaningful. I mean, it's Francisco Bravo's race. He's got like at least three, maybe four horses, three, I guess, including Star of the North. And I wouldn't give short shrift to his Oki bred, Just Chillin', who didn't stay a mile last time, cuts back, ran a pretty big fire two races ago, and might be capable. But I would, in the pick four, I would cast a wider net in this race.
Interesting, because Western
Waverly, I know, was bad last time, but that horse ran a couple really big races over the summer last year. Not ruling that horse out either.
And those came, of course, at Canterbury, and it's an unusual scenario. You got that Doug Anderson, second time starter, Our Last Chance. Our friend David Miller, who we've known for years, and I brought this up. I don't know if you know David at all.
David, the chart caller.
David, the well, he may do that too. I know him as a bloodstock guy. From the area, and he's training now, and his business is Star of the North. I thought it was very funny that you've got the favorite in here that's Star of the North, and that's David's business moniker. And he's got Summer Swinger in here, a homebred for Pete Mattson, and Mattson is represented elsewhere in the sequence as well. I mean, there's one thing about this, Marcus, that's really notable. The Minnesota faithful, probably the best way to put it. You know, you've got a nice community, and we could talk about this with Indiana too. But you've got a really nice, long-standing community of owners, breeders in Minnesota, and it kind of stands out. You know, looking at the local entries that are involved in this sequence.
I agree with that, and they do a good job of supporting the program without letting it take over the entire racing program up there. I like the way they fold in the Minnesota bred enhancements into the open races, where, like, if you have a condition claimer for Minnesota bred, it's less restrictive. It allows competitiveness without, like, tilting too much toward just having state bred or stallion racing only, which sometimes can happen in certain jurisdictions, in my opinion. But Canterbury has been around for a while, and it was even when it first came, I think there was some local excitement because there's a community there, and you got Bob Lothenbach nearby. He runs his horses there pretty regularly. It's a strong core group of breeders and owners that support the track well, and they do a nice job slotting into their niche up there.
Well, looking at the Lady Canterbury, and going to go a mile in here, Evil Lynn, the favorite, 2-1 for Mike Maker, but there are some options.
Yeah, I mean, she's... Evil Lynn, I would say, is you know what you're going to get at this point. Maybe she could run better. I think that she's topped out already. I was surprised she did as much as she did after being claimed for $40,000 because I thought she was somewhat limited. Another good claim from Maker. And she comes off a pretty good race, although Hendy Woods did not run back with much authority in the stakes at Churchill last out. I'm not going to indict the entire race, but I would say that Evil Lynn has shown that she's run all over the place. She's not course dependent. She handles shipping, and she's very consistent. It's just, she's fine. She fits the spot. She's a deserving favorite, but I couldn't get too wrapped up in her chances here because she doesn't have a huge margin for error. The thing is, like, you're getting down then. Well, I picked Lady Lawyer on top. I just thought her turf mile at Keeneland last year convinced me that she could. She's capable of winning with the right trip. She can't go too fast. Get caught up in a duel because she's like a 7 furlong to a mile horse, so she'll get tired if she has to work too hard. But she might not have to work too hard. I know she's been trading well. They had been considering the Chicago Stakes this weekend at Arlington over 7 furlongs on Polytrack, and this seems like a more suitable spot. I Stidham, I think, has won this race before, trainer Michael Stidham, and has shipped horses regularly to Canterbury through the year, so I trust this barn to send the right horse for these races. She'll be the second choice, not much of a price. I wouldn't blame anyone from digging a level down and trying to come up with something juicier because I don't see either of those two horses as especially formidable.
Press forward to the Mystic Lake Mile. And this again, we've got Parlor, Maker, 5-2, second off the layoff. And you look outside, Brad Cox has got Hieronymus, who you know, is going to be forced to go from out there. There's some very accomplished horses in this field. And again, we've got some movement, you know, to and fro, turf and dirt, and some that, like Lord Dragon, caught my attention at 10-1, Marcus. Chris Richard, he tried to get Lord Dragon on the grass, this Oxbow gelding, tried to get him on the grass for the prep, and it didn't come off. But I respect Richard plenty, and at a price, I thought Lord Dragon had a little bit of a look, but the, you know, the major players, Parlor and Hieronymus, that's the place to start.
Well, I don't like Parlor. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think he's on the downside of everything. He didn't, after his huge run in the Makers and Mark Mile last summer, he kind of faded back. He's got a lot of miles under him, and he maybe didn't love the going by Churchill, but at a short price, I'm not enthused about him at all. I like Hieronymus better, who will be shorter than 4-1 on the line. But it's going to be tough for him with all the other pace involved and drawn outside. I don't think he is a horse to really count on passing other horses, so all they can really do is go. I do think he's capable of, I know he's been on slow paces in the past, but I suspect that this horse will be able to take some fractions and finish. He's set up to run his best race so far this year. You can't hold his sloppy track performance last time against him. It was just a race he needed to keep going and get in a racing rhythm after a kind of a meh comeback race against a decent field at Aqueduct. I would say I'm less confident in him than the other two Cox horses on the card, but I do think that I would prefer him over Parlor. Giant Payday, you know, just missed in this race last year. I can't see him running any better than that at age 7, but he's a consideration. And I believe I picked Summer Assault. I had that horse second.
Yeah.
Winner of the Mystic Lake Derby last year over kind of a blah field. But did run into, it was in the wrong circumstances going 7/8 on Poly Track last time at Arlington. And ran a good, a better race than you might think. If you look at how fast he came home, two back in a pretty decent allowance race. I do think that, and that Michelle Boyce is another a Chicago person who's shipped and won stakes at Canterbury before over the likes of.
Yeah. Case, we lost Marcus. Yeah, from what I can tell. All right, see if regather. Right. Yeah. That's the distinctive, the distinctive sound. So we'll get him back. I'm definitely using Lord Dragon. I'll tell you that. The Richard. Because I think he's gonna get a good cozy trip. I mean, Cinco Star, who's stretching out of the 10,000 lakes, has got speed, so he's gonna clear off, and Lord Dragon is gonna have the, you know, the inside trip to himself. That's my thought. So in terms of getting a price in here, but yeah, I mean. Hieronymus, I guess, well, what did we say yesterday? The horse, right, Touch Revenge, right to, you know, right to his inside is going to greet him. Summer Assault, that's right, Summer Assault is certainly going to get out there after, he won't be far off. So, all right, there we go. Marcus is back.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, we lost you. It's all right. I just was saying, you know, I was going back to who might, you know, be inside testing Hieronymus in terms of, you know, prompting the pace. And you mentioned Michelle Boyce.
Yeah. Cut's Revenge is a pretty fast horse.
Yep.
I think that's the other major pace player. And maybe it works out decently for Hieronymus. The horse that Deodoro just claimed, Sonny Smack, I think could outrun his odds, too. He finished nicely last time. When switched to turf for just the second time in his career, they clearly had that in mind when they claimed him, and now they've given him a chance in the stakes race off at two other than win. Those are some positive signs, and he's got the right style, I think, to get into a good spot, too, if it worked out for him.
Well, the mile gives way to the feature, the $150,000 Derby, and a couple of really nice three-year-olds, TD Dance and Chess's Dream. I also thought that Maker's Other Horse was a player in here, Shady McGee, who seems to be going
yeah,
in the
like
right direction.
Better.
Right?
Yeah.
What are we doing
but
here?
I think Cox is going to win this race, TD Dance. I think he's developing into a pretty decent horse. I know his figures, his buyer figures are not especially high, but he did, he was a little bit unprofessional three races ago, I think, just not settling properly, but he got that down and ran a good race, winning that one other than at Fairgrounds with kind of less than ideal trip. And then he was easily the best race of his career and much, much the best, albeit against a modest group in the James Murphy at Pimlico. But he did show a really nice turn of foot and came home in a fast, raw time as, you know, trained forwardly, I believe, since then. Will be shorter than 5-2, I believe, but ought to get a great setup in a race filled with speed. And I'm afraid that I would be backing the favorite in this race.
Well, from that point, there's two allowances, and maybe Marcus, give just a glance for those that are going to play the pick five, which starts with the Lady Canterbury, then goes to the mile, and then the Derby. Are there strong leans in those last two?
Sure. Backtracking just 1 second. I did end up talking to Larry Ravelli, who is King of Miami in the Mystic Lake Derby, who might be a nice horse. He did say that he ran him in a tongue tie last time, and then I think he trained him subsequently in a tongue tie and realized the horse was like really resenting the way that felt, and it was maybe restricting his ability to breathe properly. So it's tongue tie off for King of Miami, whose connections had this race in mind when he was defeated as the favorite in that Arlington allowance race last time. Suspect he's going to be sent for the lead from the rail, and if he got clear, which I don't think he really can, he might run better. Anyway, allowance races. Well, I'm going to have to refresh my memory of these contests, having
got,
not prepared
two,
to speak about them.
No problem.
Well, I mean,
2-6 for a long.
Good, the favorite. I mean, the obvious horse looks like he would have a good chance for Mac Robertson in the
right.
Ninth. But let's see. Yeah, that race didn't have a lot of. I didn't see a lot of horses there that had upside or special appeal or might be low in speed at a price. So I couldn't get much farther than that. And then in the last, Crimes Free. I picked Crimes Free to win. All I have to do is remember who that is.
Eric Heitzman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this horse ran into some pretty good horses at Fairgrounds over the winter. Don't trust him nearly as much as I would some of the other horses like TD Dance. I'd say this race would be way more spreadable because I saw quite a number of horses who looks capable of winning. I mean, this is a race to use B's and C's in the sequence for me.
And that probably includes Ship It Red from Valerie
Yes,
Blunt.
Yes, definitely.
Right? Discreet Tiger, Mac Robertson.
Great mix as well.
Michael Baylor with Ray's Angel, the 5-2 favorite. Yeah, this would be a place on your anchor leg. And considering that there are a couple of places you might be able to lean and go a little narrow, you know, including maybe with TD Dance and you know, possibly Hieronymus and
For me, definitely the TD Dance more than Hieronymus. I feel more confident in him. And I will say in the last, I didn't realize Ray's Angel, I hadn't seen the odds. That horse is listed as a 5-2 favorite. I would be against him. I think there's plenty of other pace in the race. He's never won at 3/4. I think he struggles beyond 5.5 to see it out if there's other speed. And I don't think he's going to get an easy trip.
It is a really nice card. And the Sirius Racing starts in the third at 7:10 Eastern with the Oaks and goes till 10:40 Eastern for those that are looking ahead to Canterbury and the Mystic Lake Northern Stars Turf Festival. It's a big title for the action. And Marcus, while I've got you, because I know Indiana also, are you banging out 9 for 11s and 8 for 10s at Indy?
No, I did have a $34 winner yesterday, though, so I felt pretty good about that. And even beyond that, I was struggling for a few weeks there. Things weren't making good sense to me. And it's a track I usually feel pretty comfortable with. But the last week or so, I don't know, it just, you go through these phases where you know you're kind of at sea. I felt like I had greater command of the form in going through the cards recently. So I'm actually feeling pretty good about things there. It's just, they get so much rain there. It's kind of insane how many off-the-turf cards there are. Also, there's so many more Indiana-sired races this year than ever before. That's a little change in the dynamic, too, and they're writing them, at multiple levels. I know the breeding program there is really working hard to support their members and the horses that are bred and sired in the state. And there's been some shift over time that I guess I'm still trying to accommodate. But they do have a couple. They have a couple not sired but just state bred sprint stakes on the card today, and a lot of stakes races coming up. The Indiana Derby's right around the corner. They have it on the turf more recently, and despite a high percentage of winning favorites, it was 40 the last time I saw. There are plenty of prices to be found in various spots, especially on grass. There, I think, as a rule, you do well to dig deep in grass races and not settle for the most obvious horses. I don't see any strong biases on that course, or haven't, but I do see horses that particularly like it. And again, lots of like 15 to 30 to 1 shots who get home there. So that can really, in sequences, it can really help you if you feel like you can lean on favorites in some of the other types of races they have.
Well, the racing's been good. We'll talk to Bill Downs in hour three this morning. I do see that you made Diamond Solitaire your best on the day. That comes in the first of the two stakes in the six for Stephen Lister. And then in Sudden Shift, who's a 15-1 shot for Dr. Gorham in the eighth.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be that long a price. I do like that horse, though. Diamond Solitaire is a horse that caught my eye from the beginning of her career because she just moves so nicely. She doesn't run that fast, but I feel like even though she was good at two, she is kind of meant to be a better three-year-old. Also, getting her out to routes, I think has always been her calling, and she's only run in two route races. That blinkers on last time. Might have run better than her figure. I think she's going to get a fair setup at a fair price. I did like her quite a bit in that Indiana Bred Stakes race today.
And then how about the price, though? What appealed to you about Sudden Shift?
I didn't think the favorites were invulnerable. And I called these sprint stakes earlier. I was getting confused with another day where they were old, maybe last week. And these are 3-year-old route races. That horse, I don't have the form in front of me, but now I remember. They ran him several times short last year. As soon as they ran him long, he improved immensely. And I think he has 3 5.5 furlong races this year, and he's a route horse who's just been running in sprints waiting for the right spot. I think he's going to show sharp improvement getting back out to two turns again.
Well, and this is a Bob Gorham specialty, sprint to route, and it just feels like, you know, he's been sharpening him up for this opportunity.
Correct.
Big time. And, yeah, you look at that maiden breaker going a mile in the slop and then a mile 70 in the Indiana Futurity.
Those were good races.
Yeah.
Those races fit this race easily, in my opinion.
And Deshaun Parker has been riding him regularly. Big fan of Dr. Gorham. The action at Indiana this afternoon feeds right into Canterbury, and really two of the outstanding signals for the Monday through actually Sunday with Canterbury, the Sunday through Thursday set, the action at Canterbury in Indiana, really engaging. Marcus, before we go, your thoughts on last week's news? I saw you wrote the piece up about the Bears making their intentions known toward the property in Arlington. Is it legitimate, or are they just using it as leverage against the city for a rebuild of Soldier Field?
I wouldn't pretend to know anything about that. I mean, whatever anybody reads in the papers, it's way more than I know about the Bears. And also, we only know two entities that have supposedly submitted bids to CDI for the property. There could be a dozen more. I mean, I don't know. No one knows what the specifics are, what the money is like. And until, you know, we get further information, to me, it's all crass speculation. I do think that the racing group, which is not just racing, but they do want to preserve racing there, and they made their bid known on the day that June 15th, that supposedly was the deadline for submitting offers on the property. I do think they have real money behind them, and they're a legitimate entity. That's not just some sort of show thing. And that group wanted to parcel out the immense property into different sorts of things, like a minor league hockey venue and some residential, some maybe warehouse space, and then a smaller footprint for the racing venue, decrease the size of the stables, and just compact things a little bit, which makes good sense. And I have been told there are real racing people behind that movement.
Right.
So there's at least one entity in addition to the Bears that would want to buy the Arlington land and try to continue racing there. There are impediments to that. They would have to get a license, and also there's no way that they can piggyback upon the 2019 gambling expansion that would have permitted slot machines at Arlington. That's something that they would have to work out, figure out how to try to get that approved legislatively, since it took 100 years to even get that gambling expansion to allow racetracks to begin with, I would say it's hardly a fait accompli that that's something they could do.
Well, in the meanwhile, as that percolates, we can still look forward to, you know, what will be Million Preview Day, as it were, and the
two stakes this weekend. First stakes is a meet,
right? The Hanshin and the
Arlington. Chicago.
There we go.
7/8 on Polytrack for the females, and that's a race that has had a lot of good winners in the past. And then the mile on Polytrack, the Hanshin. And I will say that the racing there has not been unplayable. I mean, granted, they've been running just four 8 race cards a week, so they keep the inventory. They don't have to make that many races. And there have not been a ton of high-level races, but they are using the turf course a lot, which is good. And it's not a terrible product by any means. And I think it should get better over the next couple of months, especially with the Churchill backstretch closing. I think that Arlington has a lot of open stalls, and some people could make their way up to Chicagoland from Kentucky.
I speculated on that on Monday with Bill Downs, actually, that it'll be, I mean, as full as their fields have been, and I don't know if there are any stalls left. I know that Eric Hallstrom building, I think, three more barns at Indiana. But
well, they got one big one that's slated to be open, I think, at the end of this year, which is going to be helpful.
Well, the with the Churchill, you know, construction work that is going to happen, the horses are going to turn up in other places. That'll be interesting, and I suppose, you know, Presque Isle, not far off either. Be interesting to see where, you know, where those horses go. Ellis and of course some will come to Saratoga. It'll it's going to be an interesting. Some circuits are going to get a boost to their entries.
Yeah, I think so.
Marcus, this was tremendous. I appreciate it. Some Canterbury, some Indy, and some Arlington, the big three. We're gone next week for vacation, so we'll catch up later in July.
Sounds good, Steve. Look forward to it.
I appreciate it. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch. Let's stay right here. Pat McKenna is going to join us from NYRA. And just in time, I'm going to pull up. Let me pull up my Ticketmaster account. I should have had the screen open, but I didn't. All right, here we go. Ticketmaster. And let's see. Let's see. Sign in. Did you do what I suggested and open an account? I hope you did. And you know what? Maybe what I'll do is, as we talk to Pat, we'll try to buy tickets. How about that? And see, I did exactly what I warned you about. I think I put in the wrong password. So, right? I warned everybody, and then I go ahead and do it myself. So, yeah, let's see. Now I'm 0-3. Unbelievable. Although, you know what? It may have been so long. I've moved away from an old email address. I had the terrible email up here that Time Warner had with the, you know, NYCAP, NYCAP.RR. They would use whatever, you know, whatever, wherever Time Warner was. It was the worst. But it was my only email for years and years and years. So I've now tried to consolidate everything to a Gmail account. So I'm wondering, it's been long enough that I might have my old. I've stopped even putting it in because I think I've changed, you know, the address in almost every place that I've needed. But like I said, when was the last time you bought any tickets for anything, right? There you go, Case. Let's see what happens if the old if the old address. This is exactly what I warned everybody about, and I'm my next thing will be to try. I do have Ticketmaster on the phone. I do have their app, so maybe I'm better off doing that while we wait for Pat. There we go, Ticketmaster on the app. Let's try that. Yeah, there we go. No issues here. Isn't that funny? All right. So let's see. And they're pretty funny. Even here, they're going to make me put in a new password. Unbelievable. I think we got Pat in the background. Pat?
Steve?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It's a beautiful morning. It's all happening.
as I put in a new, I did everything wrong that I told people, I warned people to get their Ticketmaster account in order, and then I had to go do the radio show, so I didn't do it myself. While I'm doing that, please give everybody the clarification or the confirmation that they can bring their folding chair through the gates at Saratoga.
Sure. So we dutifully updated the webpage last year to reflect some temporary policies that were in place for the very limited number of licensed owners that were on track during the 2020 meet. Remember, there was a small area that was dedicated to licensed owners with a horse in that day adjacent to the paddock. It was essentially a picnic area, and we did not allow folks to bring additional chairs, which is how that language came to be. Didn't realize the website had yet to be updated, but the long and the short of it is that there was no consideration, there was no conversation. We had never intended on preventing people from bringing chairs to the backyard. I've been going to Saratoga my entire life. I've been working at Saratoga Racecourse in this capacity since 2016. I don't even understand how the backyard would function. Think about the space in between the racing office and the administration building. That's green space utilized by fans every single day with folding chairs, with beach chairs. We have no intention of ever changing that policy. There are certain restrictions on tents along the horse path, certain things along the horse path. Those things are always designed to protect the horses. But no change to that policy about chairs. I can understand, frankly, why there was some confusion because of that webpage. But luckily we have updated that, and we can confirm to all of the fans that you can bring your chairs into Saratoga Racecourse in 2021 and beyond. And while we're at it, as I said the last time, food and beverage, NARA's longstanding policy allowing for outside food and beverage, continues in 2021. If folks are on these web pages and reviewing carefully the NARA policies related to Saratoga Racecourse, then you will see restrictions on bringing coolers into the venue, on bringing coolers onto the apron. Those have been in place for many, many years, again, just because we don't want coolers on benches on the apron, so that preventing people from sitting and watching the races or enjoying themselves in there during the day. So there are no changes to those policies. And if we go back a little further, when we designated the entire backyard as a vaccinated section, we did that with the idea in mind that Saratoga Racecourse is not Saratoga Racecourse without a free-flowing, open backyard. We recognize the importance of that space. It is what makes Saratoga so special. We have been very clear about that. And I think, luckily, the people that work at NARA from the very top on down understand and appreciate that that is what accounts for the magic of the Saratoga experience. Sure, there are a million great ways to enjoy your day, everything from a clubhouse box to some of the new areas we're talking about. But fundamentally, the foundation of Saratoga is the accessible, open backyard.
Well said, and greatly appreciated to have you address it. And I'm kind of made light of the internet's treatment of this thing overnight, because I woke up to half a dozen emails and things on Derby Trail and Facebook, and people.
It also frankly shows you the passion that exists in the camps of this meeting.
There you go.
Right. I mean, it's amazing, and the level of detail that folks are getting into on web pages, and obviously with the way that that some of the information travels fast and furious in the days of social media. But I'm glad and pleased to be able to allay any concerns that the backyard will change. It will not.
Good news, and That's one of Pat's major responsibilities is concern a layer. You can put that on your card, actually, if you want. All right, I have gotten my password changed. It was making me change my password because that's how long it's been since I've looked at getting tickets for anything, and just kind of thumbing through. Apparently, I've already gotten one note. Travers Day apparently sold out already, which shouldn't be surprising, I suppose.
No. It shouldn't. That's in line with previous years. There are also, remember, those weekly plans. People purchase those weekly plans with the Travers in mind, with Whitney Day in mind. There is there is such pent up demand and enthusiasm and energy for this meet. You know, we're seeing folks who are purchasing weekly plans with the understanding that they may even go through 3 days and not the full 5 days. So it's a different kind of demand this year for obvious reasons. We saw it on the very first day we went on sale, the very first hour. We've sold more season passes, nearly as many season passes at this point as we did in all of 2019. I think that all of the data points point to a spectacular meet, huge crowds, huge wagering, and high quality racing.
I'm just I just clicked on the first thing, and I looked for Saturday, for this Saturday, you know, opening Saturday weekend, 4-star Dave. There's actually a table for two and a table for four that are available for Saturday. So that was the first thing I just sort of just clicked on. But everything, you know, that we talked about earlier this week, available as of right now, and for all 40 days, and except for Travers, it appears. But you're talking about Clubhouse, Grandstand, and the Stretch, 4-star Dave, the Picnic Paddock, the Rail at the 1863, next Wednesday, dining reservations at the Turf Terrace, the Porch, and the Club Terrace, the traditional three-tier dining areas, will go on sale next Wednesday.
You got it. That's right.
Excellent. Well, it looks like everything is going okay. Let me, you know, you can keep scrolling down to further weekends. And what kind of reception, since we talked last, Pat, 2 weeks ago, what kind of reception did the news get about the new concepts and, for instance, I'm going to forget what we're calling it.
So you have the spa verandas at the top of the stretch, and then you have the tailgate at the turn section.
The tailgate.
Designated for individual cars, individual parties of 4 to 6 in a car, pull up and park in a designated area. And then in that same area, there's a bar and some hospitality offerings, betting terminals, obviously televisions, and some restrooms. So that's a completely new concept, which, as we talked about last time, is in the vein of a Far Hills model or a Saturday afternoon tailgate. It'll be really interesting to see how folks approach that. The spa verandas, the former picnic paddock, which was really just concrete with some tents. So we've constructed some permanent covered picnic areas, you know, suitable for up to 45 people, benches, some lounge seating, again, betting terminals, televisions, private access to that area of the apron, which is a fun spot to watch horses around the final turn there. And then I think I neglected to discuss last time, or maybe we did, the continued expansion of the stretch, which has proven really popular, flexible space, suitable for small and larger groups, a great bar. I think it's a really interesting vantage point. I think there were some questions when we first launched it in 2018, what it would look like, how people would utilize it. But I think those questions were answered pretty quickly. You know, it's not your finish line view, but the amenities there are at a level that people have really come to not only expect from their sports venues, but also enjoy. And that's been well received. I think it's a great bar. If you ever have the opportunity, we sell standing room only for $15 over there, and it's a fun spot to hang out. So we expect that to continue. And as you say, single day is now on sale. The only thing that is remaining is dining, which will go on sale next Wednesday.
Well, and I just went to, let's see, I jumped ahead to Saturday, July 31st, and I'm looking at the stretch, and there's probably, I don't know, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, it's probably 28, 30 seats available. That's, you know, third weekend of the meet already. So the news is that ideally, wherever, you know, whatever weekend or whatever weekday you want to come, you can. I think there's going to be things available, and Travers always sells out, so that's not a surprise. But other than Travers Day,
and I also, Steve, I'll just stop you there, and also want to mention and be clear that walk up general admission will be available every single day of the meet. I still see some questions about what that may look like, understandably, considering the restrictions that were in place prior to last week regarding purchasing advance admission, for example, at Belmont Park, where that was a requirement because of the COVID restrictions, social distancing, and the rest of it. So walk-up general admission will be available every single day. Don't forget, free admission for anyone who is fully vaccinated and can demonstrate that with either the New York State Excelsior Pass or the CDC vaccination card on opening day, Thursday, July 15th.
Well, and Pat, you made me think of a couple things. We should reiterate, I mentioned this on Monday when I heralded that, you know, we were going to kind of walk people through this. If you're looking for a group activity and you want to make those arrangements, 844-NYRA-TIX, 844-NYRA-TIX.
I would probably not call that number today.
Today will be nuts.
A larger
yes.
group. The guys in the folks in the sales office are incredibly accommodating, but with the volume of incoming calls today, I would probably hold off on that number. And it is a great way to get some additional information if you're talking about a larger group, something on the, you know, a full floor rental in the 1863 club, you know, one of those spa verandas potentially. But today, the best way, the most efficient way to get those tickets is Ticketmaster.com.
Pat, the other question that popped in my head, Monday, Stewart's started selling the season passes. Did you get a read yet on how brisk, you know, those offerings were?
No, I mean not specific to Stewart's on Monday, but they have, you know, increased interest in those season passes has only increased since they first launched. I think people recognize that it is truly one of the best values in all of sports. I mean, even your average day at Saratoga, and, you know, general admission is a fantastic deal. And the season pass really steps it up. So we appreciate the partnership with Stewart Shops, ubiquitous in upstate New York, and they're only continuing to grow. So it's great that they're offered in so many Stewarts around upstate New York.
Well, $50 for the entire season. So after you've gone, when you come for your eighth visit of the year, you've paid for the thing. And if you come, you know, if you come 30 times, you saved yourself several hundred dollars. I mean,
I think that obviously, especially if you're local and you want to maybe swing by, you know, a late lunch hour, maybe early in the evening on Friday, but you're not looking to set up camp for the entire day, that season pass is a really great option, you know, because again, like you said, it frees you up, it pays for itself really quickly, especially if you're kind of popping in and out 10, 12, 15, 20 times in a meet.
Very much. Well, just got word from my friend Vince. He's coming, and Vince said he got tickets, no problem, for the 14th and 15th. So that's a good sign. So go, you know, go target your key weekend and the days that you're hoping for, and you know, also, you know, if grandstand is unavailable, try, you know, maybe pick one day to go try a new area, for instance.
That's right.
You know,
yep.
You know,
and Steve, again, those Travers tickets are only available as a weekly plan. So if you're looking for reserve Travers seats, those are only now available by for the full week. And that is actually not anything new. That's been in place
for
at least 3 years, if not longer. So general admission, obviously, free and clear on Travers Day. But if you're looking for reservations, then a weekly plan is your best bet.
Which, you know, most people, I think, a lot of people come, I mean, for Travers Week. So if that's their, you know, if that's their preferred week to visit. So shouldn't be an issue. Well, and as we were talking, two seats that I had picked out in the stretch were snatched out from under me, Pat. Somebody got to them before I could. Not that I wasn't going to actually buy them, but I've been going through the motions here to prove that you could get tickets if you want. So, everybody's concerns are allayed as we referenced earlier, and you can start to plan your trips in for Saratoga hotels.
Yeah. And we appreciate the patience, because again, yeah, this level of ticket demand is unprecedented in the history of Saratoga Racecourse. The going back to the first Wednesday, we were on sale selling as many tickets in that one day as we did in certain areas in all of 2019. You know, as we're talking, just through the first 10 or 15 minutes, we're seeing thousands of tickets being sold, as you're seeing on the site itself. So, you know, not unlike an incredibly in-demand concert. You know, this will require a little bit of patience. We thank everyone. We look forward to seeing our fans back where they belong at Saratoga come July 15th and every day thereafter.
Well, we still have got plenty of racing to go at Belmont, including Stars and Stripes Festival ahead. And as of this week, actually, right? As of tomorrow, patrons, $5 GA to come in the door. No more reservation issues or having to make arrangements. You're free and clear.
That's right.
Pat, I appreciate this, and this should go a long way, this visit, and the ticket sales that have just kicked off in the last 20 minutes should go a long way to getting people excited and set to go and set to come up here. Weeks away now.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
I appreciate it. Pat McKenna, everybody. PC McKenna on your Twitter. And you should be following Pat. And I'm just looking. Today is the 23rd. And, of course, we got the sale later today at Santa Anita. Keep an eye on that. In fact, I've got got a couple of hips to watch, maybe, that we can throw at you. But just looking at the calendar, so today's the 23rd. So we got another week. We got 7, and so 23 days. 23 days away. Wow. Get ready. Get your tickets and clean off the folding chair. It's probably maybe a little rusty. This isn't you know, Delaware County Fairgrounds. This is not like Little Brown Jug, where you you can padlock your chair to a tree at Saratoga. So get some WD-40. You know. Get the squeak off. Get any rust off your folding chair, and get ready. Let's do this. We'll take a break. We're an hour and 25 in. on this Wednesday, and looks like things are very smooth on that Ticketmaster website. Good job, Ticketmaster. You only have to wait a couple of 10 seconds, 15 seconds. They put a little thing up and says, due to demand, please, it might be a couple of minutes. Wasn't even. Pretty much switches to the screen to pick seats very, very rapidly. So, and check out the other parts. I mean, there's some high ticket. There are some high ticket options these days, that never existed before, like that 1863 club. Those are, I think, what, $150, $160 for the super premium option. But poke around, see what suits you, your budget, and your experience interest for the spa this summer. Let's take a break. We're going to get a visit in with Sid. We've got Bill Downs later. We've got Lenny Shulman later as well with his book, Head to Head. I got my copy sitting right here, Conversations with a Generation of Horse Racing Legends. And there's some great ones in here. Some I saw, when they first appeared. Others will be brand new. And a lot of the conversations with people that, are gone. With absent friends, as Red Smith would say. Back after this, second half at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horse players, the Southern California Daytime Thoroughbred Racing Circuit is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse for our exciting summer meet. Opening day is Friday, June 25th, and will run through Monday, July 5th. First post is 1 p.m. Pacific, and as always, exciting racing action is ahead. Our opening weekend features the Bertrando Stakes on Saturday, June 26, followed by a great 4th of July weekend of racing. On Saturday, July 3rd, the Los Alamitos Derby heads the marquee. Past winners of this race include Eclipse Award winners, Accelerate, Shared Belief, Game Winner, and more. On Sunday, July 4th, Los Alamitos will host a live money handicapping contest with two berths to the 2022 NHC up for grabs. And on closing day, Monday, July 5th, the racing action will be headed by the Great Lady M Stakes. Horse players, remember that Los Alamitos features a traditional $2 pick six with a 70-30 split. This summer, exciting daytime thoroughbred racing is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Sirius XM Sports presents... The races.